Welcome to Local Talk Friday on KHOY Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, events, and places in Central Iowa. It's good to get together again to provide facts to our community through Zoom technology and the spoken word. Thank you for listening. I am Pat Schlarbaum, your host for the hour, with engineer Mike Murphy and good neighbor Mike Metz, keeper of the Prairie Winds Prairie. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Pat.
How is life on the prairie this fine day?
Well, I'll tell you, this morning when what was left of the full moon was starting to sink, two great horned owls were in the cedars and woke the dog up. You could just hear them hooting out there.
Yeah.
I'm going to go look for pellets later today.
Yeah, and they'll be hatching young.
Yeah.
Here in February. I guess they're the first nesters. Good sign of the seasons moving along. There is a full slate of Local Talk guests in the wings, so to speak, with information from our fair region of Iowa for your enjoyment on this 18th day of February, 2022.
The weather will again be welcomely warmer today with a high of 46 and a low tonight of 13. Warm over the weekend with 36 Saturday and 57, woohoo, on Sunday. Snow and ice are forecast for next Tuesday and into the 20s next week. So let's welcome Dennis Hart, who works so diligently at gathering the news for this week from the pages of our local newspaper.
The coronavirus, a retired Iowa State University professor sues the university, and some ISU students head overseas again. All made big news in the Ames Tribune this past week. Let's begin with last Friday's paper, which reported that the coronavirus continued its decline across Iowa last week. The Department of Public Health said 12,833 new cases of the virus were reported in the state over the previous 7 days. That was a drop of 44% from the week before. The number of people hospitalized with the virus also went down to 617, the fewest since late November of last year. But the number of coronavirus-related deaths remained elevated. 172 additional deaths were reported last week, bringing the total number of coronavirus-related deaths to 8,829 since the pandemic started. 1,000 of them had been in Polk County, making it the first county in Iowa to reach that total. The Trib also reported that a retired Iowa State University professor was suing the university over her pay. Sylvia Cianzio retired in 2020 after more than 40 years at the university. In her lawsuit against ISU, the state, and the Iowa Board of Regents, she alleges she'd been paid up to $46,000 a year less than some male colleagues. She was a member of the agronomy department and had been in charge of its diversity, inclusion, and equity committee. In another story about pay, the Trib reported that a new state law would result in county sheriffs receiving big pay hikes across the state. The law says county compensation boards shall consider setting sheriff's salaries so they're comparable to salaries paid to command officers of the state patrol and to police chiefs in cities of certain populations. That's leading some counties to consider hiking their sheriff's salaries by more than 25%. And the Trib reported that a new nonprofit private school is in the works for next fall. The Community Academy has existed as a summer program since 2018 to blend outdoor experiences and academic work, but the goal this fall is to expand into a full-time, year-round school. The school plans to offer classes for students in kindergarten through 8th grade this fall, adding a grade level each year until it would be a K-12 school by 2026. The Academy has not made a final decision on where classes will be held. And the Trib reported that an Ames man had been charged with attempted murder after shooting at his son over loud music. Police arrested a 69-year-old man who allegedly had fired shots at his son in the 600 block of Duff Avenue. The son was not struck by any bullets and was not injured. Saturday's Trib reported that a new low-income housing complex is in the works for Ames. It's the brainchild of former Story County Supervisor Loris Olson, who has founded an organization called Home Allies. She plans to build sustainable, long-term housing for those at risk of homelessness. Her organization is partnering with Harold Pike Construction, which owns properties at 913 and 915 Duff Avenue, where two buildings would be constructed. Each one would have four studio apartments. The Ames City Council will have to approve the plan. Also Saturday, the Trib reported that the chief executive officer of Fairway Stores had pledged $2 million to the proposed Boone Recreation and Wellness Center. Before work can start on it, Boone voters have to approve a $10 million bond on March 1st. If they do, the target date for opening the rec center would be December 2024. The project would be constructed at 628 Story Street in Boone, the site of a former Fairway store. And the Trib reported on the Iowa Green Brewery Certification Program, which is designed to help breweries reduce their environmental footprint. The program started in 2017. More than 30 breweries around the state are part of the program, including the Alluvial Brewery in Ames. Sunday's Trib reported that a recent traffic stop study of Iowa State University police and Ames police found racial disproportionality in arrests, though very few of those arrests were considered discretionary. The study found that people of color were 46% more likely to be arrested by Ames police, and that people of color, when excluding Asian drivers, were 2.5 times more likely to be arrested than white drivers. That study found that Iowa State University police were 38% more likely to give citations to people of color. Nearly all of those arrests were non-discretionary, meaning officers were required to make those arrests for such things as driving under the influence or having outstanding warrants. The same study also reviewed individual officer arrests and found no clear evidence of disproportionality. And the Trib had another long takeout on the coronavirus pandemic and its effect on patients at Mary Greeley Medical Center in Ames. The story focused on one family that was affected by the virus and the day-to-day struggles the family went through when one person got and ultimately died from the virus. Tuesday's Trib reported that the Ames Public Library will bring back its EcoChat series with a discussion of the Ames Climate Plan. That will take place at 6 o'clock next Thursday evening at the Farwell Brown Auditorium at the library. The public can attend in person or watch online. The city launched a year-long process of developing emissions reduction targets last August. Then in December, the city council voted to set a goal to reduce emissions by 83% by the year 2030 and achieve net zero emissions by the year 2050. There was also word that a kindergarten teacher in the Gilbert School District had won a presidential award. Angie Bonthas was honored with a presidential award for excellence in teaching math. She calls her class a wonderful learning community. There was also a report about an Iowa State University student-run promotion called Significant Other. That's a campaign that encouraged people to show their love for others by giving them chocolate. A public relations class at ISU collaborated on a Valentine's Day project with the owners of a chocolate business on Main Street in Ames. The goal was to redefine Valentine's Day as a time to show appreciation for everyone we love. Wednesday's Trib reported that after a 2-year pause because of the coronavirus pandemic, Iowa State University students will resume travel abroad this year to help preserve U.S. Department of State properties. The partnership with the State Department has been reestablished, and students plan to travel to Rome this spring to study the campus of the U.S. Embassy there, which includes ancient ruins. The project first started in 2015 with outreach from an ISU architecture alumnus, Tobin Tracy, who is the director of the State Department's Office of Cultural Heritage. The State Department has properties on every continent except Antarctica, including embassies, homes, villas, apartments, and gardens. ISU students have done preservation projects in 6 countries in the past few years: the United Kingdom, Ireland, the Czech Republic, Sweden, Morocco, and Portugal. The Trib also reported that students and employees at the state's 3 public universities had weighed in on the topic of free speech in a recent survey. 73% of students at Iowa State University, the University of Iowa, and the University of Northern Iowa agreed that their university provides an environment for the free and open expression of ideas, opinions, and beliefs. 69% of employees at those universities agreed. But that same survey showed that only 56% of students and 49% of employees agreed that their university, as the survey put it, allows me to say things I believe. The State Board of Regents will talk about all this at a meeting next week. The Trib also had word that Story County is looking for feedback on its long-range capital improvements plan, including more than $5 million in projects planned for the upcoming budget year. A capital improvements plan is a long-range outline of the maintenance needs of community assets. The county's plan includes restoring McFarland Park Lake, as well as improvements to the Heart of Iowa Nature Trail, and a project to increase the county administration building's generator capacity. 21 projects are planned for the next budget year. And the Trib reported that the annual Boone Booster Club fundraiser would take place tomorrow night at the Farmhouse Wedding and Event Venue in Boone. The fundraiser has been taking place since 1987 to provide extra money for the Boone School District's extracurricular activities. Last year's event was canceled because of the coronavirus. This year's goal is to raise $40,000. Yesterday's Trib reported that an animal exploitation abolitionist group had filed complaints against the U.S. Department of Agriculture lab in Ames. This after the death of a fawn that was in the facility's care and the misplacing of 4 others. The Stop Animal Exploitation Now group is calling for the firing of personnel at the Ames National Animal Disease Lab over the two incidents. The facility has more than 3,000 animals, more than two-thirds of which are mice. The facility also has 116 deer in its care. In one of the incidents, a student employee ran over a fawn last year during a morning search for fawns. That fawn died later. In another incident, deer were left locked in a box for 3 days until they were discovered. The Trib also reported that Iowa State University researchers have found that getting some exercise after a coronavirus or flu shot might help boost the benefits of those shots. But the lead researcher cautioned that exercise alone without vaccination is not enough of a defense against the coronavirus. And the Trib ran a long feature story about which wines go well with Girl Scout cookies. Yes, you heard me correctly. Girl Scout cookie sales started this month, so the Trib asked a wine bar owner on Main Street in Ames to pair which cookies with which wine. You can read about the results in yesterday's paper. And that is your summary, a tasty one indeed, of the week's news from the Ames Tribune. I'm Dennis Hart. Thanks for listening. I'm taking the weekend off now, but planning to be right back here on Local Talk on Monday morning at 7, when I'll have word on what makes news around the state this week. I hope you can be here as well. Between now and then, stay safe, stay healthy, and have a great weekend.
Way down in New Orleans, I was called a rising sun. I've been the run of a many poor boys, and be your God for one. Way down in New Orleans, I was called a rising sun. I've been the run of a many poor boy, and me your God for one. I'm gonna tell my baby sister, please don't do like I have done. Please shun that old house and you only take all the rising sun. I'm gonna tell my baby sister, please don't do it like I have done. Please shine that old house in New Orleans, they call the rising sun. Go tell her now. Cause my race is almost run. I'm going back to spend the rest of my life beneath the rising sun. I'm going back to New Orleans, cause my race is almost run. I'm going back to spend the rest of my life beneath the rising sun. Going back down there.
Thank you, Dennis Hart, with your Week in the News, and the music interlude was Lead Belly, New Orleans, the Rising Sun Blues. And our next story is about a disparity of black coaches in the NFL. Mario Cothen has been featured on KHOI with a breadth of athletic knowledge and the backstory to athletic controversies. And Mario is a rising voice for community radio. Today, Mario Cothen, member of the Ames community. Are you still living in Ames, Mario?
Yes, I live in Grimes.
Okay, you live in Grimes. Well, Mario, from time to time, we've had your voice here on Local Talk, and I always appreciate your straightforward assessment of a lot of things that are necessary for our culture to move forward with. And a very strong voice for the athletic program here at Iowa State University. And I'm hearing about disparaging lack of coaching of African Americans in the American culture. How are you viewing this current situation with NFL ownership and coaching?
As of February 1st this year, there's a coach named Brian Flores. He's a four-time Super Bowl winning assistant coach underneath the New England Patriots. And then he got hired to coach the Miami Dolphins about 3 years ago. In his tenure at Miami, he had two winning seasons and one losing season, but he got fired this past year. So last year he won 10 games, and this year he won 9 games. And this year, I think he was the only coach in NFL history to lose 7 straight games and then follow up by winning 7 straight games in 1 year. The Miami Dolphins have not been a very good team for a long time. So it's like he changed the culture around there. So here's the backstory. Brian Flores got fired from the Dolphins, and wherever you looked, everybody was surprised that he lost his job because he took a team that was losing, and he's won 10 games and 9 games the last 2 years, which is pretty good. A lot of teams go to the playoffs from 10 or 9 wins, but he's in such a tough division with the Patriots and the Buffalo Bills, both of whom made the playoffs. It was hard for him to be the third team from that division to make the playoffs because there's only 14 teams that go to the playoffs to be in the NFL season. So, as I digress, he lost his job. Now, the NFL has instituted this Rooney Rule that's been going on for about 20 years. The Rooney Rule states you must at least interview one black candidate for a coaching vacancy before hiring somebody. The problem with this rule is the commissioner of the NFL, Roger Goodell, he is the commissioner, but he works for the 32 owners. So no matter what he wanted to do as far as condemning them, he really can't because they pay his salary too. The NFL owners have all the powers. So though this rule came into effect, it is set up an interview with a black candidate, and, you know, they pretty much see this as a sham interview. You're only interviewing me so you can fill the quota of interviewing a black person, and then you're going to go hire someone else. So what happened was Brian Daboll was the assistant coach for the Buffalo Bills, and like Brian Flores, they both used to coach under Bill Belichick for New England. So the New York Giants interviewed Brian Flores and Brian Daboll for their head coaching vacancy. One day, Bill Belichick, the coach of the Patriots, sends a text message out to Brian Flores, thinking he was Brian Daboll. Brian Daboll is a Caucasian man. So he sent a text to Brian Flores, mistakenly saying, "Hey, congratulations. I hear that you got the New York Giants job." Brian Flores hadn't even been interviewed by the New York Giants yet. He's like, "Really? I got the job already? How do you know that?" Bill Belichick, once again, he thinks that he's talking to the other Brian. Says, "Yeah, I heard that pretty much, yeah, the job is yours if you want it." So Brian Flores said, "Hey, Bill, are you talking to me or Brian Daboll?" Bill Belichick then says, "Oh, man, I effed this up. They're going to hire Brian Daboll." Brian Flores is confused because how can they hire this man when they haven't even interviewed me yet?
Yeah.
So, knowing that the job wasn't his, he went to the interview anyway and gave a great interview, knowing that the decision had already been made. So, as soon as they did the sham interview, the pretty much, what word am I looking for? Affirmative action interview, basically, is how you can look at it. As soon as they got done with the interview, they ended up hiring Brian Daboll, like immediately after. So as soon as that happened, Brian Flores, because he did not release the text messages from Belichick until they actually went through and hired the other Brian. So as soon as that happened, he filed a class action lawsuit against the NFL, the Denver Broncos, the Giants, and the Miami Dolphins for alleging discrimination regarding his interview process with Denver, New York, and his firing from Miami. That's what's going on right now.
Yeah, complicated and yet kind of the same old story, it sounds like. How should this be resolved, or how would you like to make improvements in this system?
How will it be resolved? You know, when the Rooney Rule started, it kind of gave me hope. The Rooney family owns the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Steelers have had one head, the coach, Mike Tomlin, also an African-American. He has been their coach for the better part of 20 years. The Pittsburgh Steelers are such a great organization. They've only had three head coaches throughout the entire time that they've been a football organization. Chuck Knoll, Bill Cowher, Mike Tomlin. So because they went out on a limb and they hired an African-American to much success, Mike Tomlin has never had a losing season, and he's already won a Super Bowl, and then he's coached in two Super Bowls. That was at one point in time, Pat, about 4 years ago, there were eight black head coaches. That are 32 teams. So eight black coaches, that's 25%. That was a vast improvement. Because right now, up until 2 days ago, there was only one black head coach out of 32 teams, and that was Mike Tomlin. Lovie Smith, the former Chicago Bear coach who led them to the Super Bowl, he just got hired for the Houston Texans. And then, from what I understand, the Miami Dolphins just hired a man named Mike McDonald. He is multiracial, but he identifies as a black man. So now there's three African-American head coaches out of 32 teams. Also, the NFL league is 75% black. Mm-hmm. There are, I believe, two general managers out of 32 teams with a league that's 75% black. Just to let that sink in. Because, you know, everybody loves numbers and statistics to back up what you say. So, with all that in mind, because if you look at the NFL, you can see on the back of the helmet, say, end racism, or something on the back of the helmets or on the field that's supposed to make you feel like they care about race relations. Until it comes to a man of color leaving an organization. You know, back in the day, there was a stigma that a black man is not smart enough to play quarterback because he doesn't practice.
Oh, yeah, those stereotypes ran deep and were quite profound. And do you feel is that the stereotype that we still need to address?
Well, nowadays, they can't say that because look at Patrick Mahomes, look at Russell Wilson. There are quite a few black men started at quarterbacks this year and the past couple years. I think they learned the error of their ways right there. But as far as fixing this, I don't know, Pat, because like I said, the commissioner of the league works for the owners. The owners, that's their money. So, of course, they're going to choose whomever they want to. And as far I want you to think about this. The New York Giants, the team that was supposed to at least give Brian Flores a fair shake before they hired somebody, has never had a black head coach in the history of their franchise. They are one of the few franchises that has never had a black head coach. But the Mara family, who owns that team, they donate their money to great causes. They, I guess they don't mind Black Lives Matter being on their players' helmets. But as far as the representation of their team, it seems like they don't trust an African-American to lead their organization, which is pretty bad because the New York Giants fire a coach every 2 to 3 years. They don't keep coaches. Yeah, Brian Flores, who has at least been winning. Brian Daboll, the guy they hired, he was an assistant coach. He's never been a head coach in the NFL. This goes so deep, Pat, that Josh McCown, who's a former quarterback, but he was coaching his son's high school football team, he got two NFL interviews for coaching vacancies, and he was coaching high school football. And this is a white man.
Yeah, yeah.
I've never heard of that in my life. a high school football coach who wasn't even the head football coach. He was an assistant. He got job interviews for the NFL.
Yeah. Well, it seems to be documented. There seems to be a lot of potential for change and improvement. Is there anything else, Mario?
Yeah. The other layer to this, Pat, is Brian Flores, along with Hugh Jackson, made a claim against their owners, saying that the owners incentivized them to lose games. When Brian Flores first got there, the Dolphins were in shambles, but they were at least competitive. So what he's claiming, because I have to say that, what he's claiming in his lawsuit is Stephen Ross, the owner of the Dolphins, told him, hey, we want you to pretty much tank, which is lose on purpose, so we can get a higher draft pick. They wanted Tua Tagovailoa from Alabama, who just won the national championship. So he told Brian Flores, the more games you lose, I'll give you $100,000 per game you lose, so it can help our draft status, which completely tarnishes the integrity of the game of football, losing on purpose.
Yeah. That was a sticky wicket there, for sure, that there's parity. If you have the losing record, then you get the higher draft choice. And that system being milked, it sounds like. Mario, I really appreciate your coming on Local Talk and helping us explore the situation of NFL coaching and the disparaging aspect of African Americans being overlooked. So thank you so much.
No problem. Real short, I think the NFL needs to pay attention to what the NBA has done. The NBA now has 14 black head coaches out of 32 teams, and also, just like the NFL, the NBA is 75% black.
Yeah.
I think they need to follow whatever the NBA is doing over there. It's working.
I like that. I thank you for sharing some advice to these NFL ownership.
Absolutely. Pat, you all have a great day. I love you guys all over there. And, yes, sir. Can't wait.
Thanks, Mario. See you.
Later.
Bye for now. Thank you, Mario Cawthon, hoping to include Mario and KHOI Community Radio Programming. So let's have a music break and stay tuned with more Local Talk to come. It is 7:27 a.m.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. And I shall do for you first a song that I first recorded. Number one, it was a fairly nice hit, and it went quite high in the American charts. The title of it is Maybelline. Oh, Maybelline, can't you be true? Oh, Maybelline, why can't you be true? You started back doing the things you used to do. As I was motivating over the hill, I saw Maybelline at a Coupe de Ville. Cadillac rolling on over the road, nothing but run by V8-4. Cadillac doing about 95, just pumping them on the road side to side. Maybelline. Why can't you be true? Oh, Maybelline, can't you be true? You started back doing the things you used to do. Cadillac pulled like 104, boats got hot, couldn't do no more. Dirt got cloud, it started to rain, true to my heart, Vaseline. Rainwater flowing all under my hood, but I knew that I was doing my motor good. Maybelline, why can't you be true? Oh, Maybelline, can't you be true?
heard that highway sound. Cadillac sat like a ton of lead, 110 half a mile ahead. Cadillac looked like setting still, and I caught Maybelline on top of the hill. Maybelline, why can't you be true? Oh, Maybelline, can't you be true? You started back doing the things you used to do.
Ah, yes, a Chuck Berry classic. From a live version, 1958.
Pat, I'd like to say that our music aficionado, Mike Murphy, over here just reminded me that we had gotten a signal received in 1978 that send more Chuck Berry, Johnny B. Goode, because he was immortalized on the gold record on Voyager when it was launched in 1977.
That's right. Chuck Berry out into the universe. The things you learn on Local Talk. And you are listening to Local Talk on KHOY Community Radio. I'm your host, Pat Schlarbaum, with co-host Mike Metz and engineer Mike Murphy. So it is February, is a National Bird Feeding Month, and Ames is a bird-friendly community. And I hope people are seeing red poles. I had a red pole that stopped by my bird feeding set up 2 days ago. But let's welcome Susan Guiazda, Public Information Officer for the City of Ames. Hi, Susan.
Hi, good to be here.
It's great to have you on Friday once again. Any announcements for the city?
I do have a couple announcements. Just a reminder, this is a holiday that sneaks up on people, but Monday is President's Day. And so most city offices will be closed. Some are open, so you need to check our website. But most City Hall and most city offices are closed on Monday, which does mean no meter enforcement. So if you're going shopping downtown, remember you don't have to plug your meter. Just a couple of other quickies. Tonight is our Virtually Anywhere and Here concert series at the City Auditorium. Today's featured guest is Allegra Hernandez. You can get more information on our website about that musician. Those series are going very well and will continue through the rest of the month. And finally, I wanted to say a little bit about our the guests I brought today. Barbara Neal is our transit director, which means she runs and operates our SciRide system. She's been a longtime SciRide employee, has a lot of tenure there, and has gone through a lot of changes. One of the recent changes we're experiencing with SciRide is pretty exciting from a carbon reduction standpoint, in that we are bringing on two new all-electric buses. And these buses are fascinating.
Yeah, this is a wonderful development. Barbara Neal, welcome to Local Talk.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you with us. And I'm just so proud of the SciRide local bus system. I remember when Ames did not have a SciRide.
Yes, the community is fortunate to have SciRide. It's a very nice bus system.
And you've devoted your whole career to SciRide?
Yep. Graduated from Iowa State, came to SciRide thinking I'd be here just for a little bit. And here I am, fast forward 30 years later, and I'm now the transit director. So it's been a great opportunity for me, and I've learned a lot along the way and met a lot of wonderful people.
Well, and one of the people that I remember that was so instrumental in working with SciRide early on was Tom Davenport.
Yep. I worked with Tom for a long point in my career. Actually, when I first started, he was there. We started in the same position. He retired. You and I were probably about 5 years ago, but Tom was a wonderful employee, and it was a lot of fun to get to know, and he did a great job managing our budget at SciRide, so he's a numbers person.
Do you have any other long-term drivers, or is it like a big family?
Well, as we've grown, I mean, SciRide's grown a lot, but we definitely have a lot of tenure at SciRide. There are people that I've been working with for the 30 years I've been there that are still there. There's people I've hired early in my career that are probably about 20 years in. Uh-huh. And it ranges everywhere from drivers to supervisors to people that help run the buses, the mechanics, lane workers, things like that. So I think it's been a good career path for a lot of people.
Yeah, again, what a wonderful profession to enhance the Ames community. And you're going to broaden into electric buses.
Yeah, so CyRide's very excited. Like Susan said, we're really excited for the community. We'll be bringing two battery electric buses. They're scheduled to arrive sometime this summer, probably around July. So this will be the first two battery electric buses in the community with a plan to get more, as this is kind of a pilot project. So we were fortunate to receive a couple grants that allowed us to bring these buses to the community for a very low cost. We received a federal LONO grant for $1.6 million, and then we received an Iowa Department of Transportation Volkswagen settlement grant for about another, well, $390,000 additional dollars. So we'll be able to bring these buses, help reduce carbon, and like I said, for a real low cost to the community and the local funding partners.
Where are the buses made?
Where are they made?
Yeah.
Is that what you said? Yeah. So we currently, we have, the bus manufacturer is called Nova Bus. It's out of Syracuse. It's out of New York. I'll figure that out before we get done here. But they come from New York. We currently are articulated buses. So our 60-foot buses are made by Nova Bus. So this one, so we're excited. It's already a kind of tried and true product that we have. So,
yeah.
Let me find it. I think I actually have exactly where they're from, out of New York. So that's kind of a bad question to not know. Plattsburgh, New York.
I see. Well, very interesting all the way around. As an industry that we hope will grow, are you hoping? What's the life cycle of a typical community bus?
Well, that's an excellent question. So heavy-duty buses like what we have, 40 to 60 foot, and including battery electric, the Federal Transit Administration life cycle is 12 years. However, funding is difficult to procure for a bus because a regular bus costs about $500,000 and an electric bus costs about $1 million. So we usually keep buses for about 20 years. So I think that speaks highly for our maintenance department. So the average bus, our average fleet age right now is 13.6 years.
I see. Okay. Mike Metz has a question.
Yeah, Barbara, I was just going to point out, I think that indications are that with an electric power plant that and a vehicle, there's going to be a lot less maintenance involved in this. There won't be all the mechanical maintenance other than that associated with the steering and that kind of thing, because you've got no engine, no transmission. So there's probably going to be, it sounds like an expensive venture up front, but going to probably recover that in savings and maintenance costs.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. I know the city has moved to electric vehicles as well, and they have recovered maintenance costs as well. We had an independent consultant kind of look at this for CyRide, and we estimate that maintenance savings will be between 30 and 50% on these vehicles. There is a lot of infrastructure that we have to bring in for these buses, so it's not quite as easy as just buying a regular bus and being able to fuel it. So we have to get a 480-volt transformer, so we're working on that. We need charging stations within the facility. Mm-hmm. So that's two, I think, is a good number to do as a trial project for CyRide. We do have five more electric buses scheduled out in our capital plan. So we'll be bringing more in slowly, but I think the two gives us an opportunity to see how they work in our community, what kind of savings we might have. There might be offsets to those savings. There might be additional operating costs based on how those buses need to be charged, things like that. But, I mean, I think it's super exciting. One of the things we did is we had a contest to develop a new kind of unique logo for these buses. So that was fun. About 1,700 votes, and the logo that won, we were calling the electric plug. So it has a big electric plug on the side of the bus. So kind of looking, it's yellow. It kind of matches the CyRide colors, but hopefully is unique and kind of draws attention to that sustainability.
Yeah. Well, the pollution issue, I think is, you know, I remember when the CyRide buses extended the exhaust system away from the street, straight up.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
I do notice the buses. I really appreciate having them take on the brunt of the transportation, from particularly between campus and downtown. And I guess at another era, there was the little railroad train that took people back and forth. And then lo and behold, it became a bus system. And now you're going electric. I'm in the process of getting some solar panels where I live out in the country, and I work with Alliant Energy. So Is that similar? Do you have in your charging station, will that electricity be supplied from a major company or like Alliant or MidAmerican, or how's that going to work? Are you going to be able to have your own windmills?
Well, actually, we get our electric from the City of Ames. They do an awesome job for us. Don Com has been a great partner. The City of Ames has been a great partner. They actually donated, I mean, kind of as part of our grant application, the 480-volt transformer for us. So that's exciting. We are working closely with them. They have a lot more knowledge about power and electricity than we do. So that relying on them to be our partners.
Yeah, but I do.
And Pat, I can tell you that the energy portfolio mix from the City of Ames is a mixture of renewables and natural gas power. So not a little tiny bit of solar, some wind, some refuse-derived fuel, and a generation from our own generation facility, the power plant.
Well, I just love it. It's great. Are there other things that I'm overlooking?
No, I was just going to say, when you talk about renewable energy, obviously the buses are great for sustainability, and Susan makes a great point. All right, also, we kind of use like a geothermal thing as we heat and cool our building. So we take the wastewater that comes off the cooling towers, circulate it through our building, cool it down, and it operates much like geothermal. So that's another way in which we can help with sustainability. We've been doing that since we built the building in 2008, and it's been a great savings and really a great thing for CyRite and for Iowa State University as well.
Oh, it is. It's just positive inputs all the way around. No pun intended, but it's so positive. I can't get enough of it because it's public transportation. And anything that Ames can do to promote public transportation and bicycling, it just helps. Now that we're becoming a real rolling metropolis, I remember Ames, you know, when it was around the 50,000 level of getting around town. And you can't help but notice it's really grown. Ames is growing, and it's great that the CyRite opportunities could be growing also.
Yeah, I wonder if Barb could talk a little bit about that history of growth that sort of has evolved into the partnership that CyRite is today, the combination of funding elements from the university and just the expansion of ridership amongst university students. They've become great partners in transit.
Yeah, so CyRite's kind of uniquely funded compared to most transit agencies. So we get our local funding from the university administration, Iowa State students who give us a large portion of our local funding, and then the City of Ames, which of course is a great partner for us as well. CyRite has really grown over the years that I've been here. So when I started, it was about 2 million passengers riding on CyRite. And since I've been here in my career, it's gone all the way up to 6.7 million. Short of the pandemic, our ridership was probably about between 5.5 and 6 million. So I think we're carrying a lot of people. One of the things I like to say, it's not quite as impressive when you've had 2 years of pandemic numbers, but third of the nation in rides per capita. So when you look at rides per capita, it goes San Francisco, New York, Ames, Iowa. So I don't think it's nice to know that the community this size has such a outstanding, and not just because I work there, but really a benchmark organization that a lot of transit agencies look to lead and to see how we're doing things. And third in the nation is pretty impressive.
Impressive, very much so. Well, thank you so much, Barbara Neal.
Thanks for having me.
With CyRite, a great report, and you uplift all our spirits. And Susan, did I read where there's going to be an indoor farmers market starting on Saturday?
I did see that. That's Main Street sponsors those, but I also have those marked on my calendar. So there is one this Saturday. I will be stopping by because there's always goodies to eat. It looks like we're going to enjoy some great weather today. I encourage everybody to get out and visit the City of Ames Park.
Okay. Great words to live by. Thank you so much. Susan Guiazda, Public Information Officer for the City of Ames, and Barbara Neal, thank you so much. Have a nice weekend, folks.
brought me over on a ship. That was men standing over me. And a lot more with a lip, and everybody wanna know why I'm singing the blues. I've been around a long time, really beat my blues. Laid in a ghetto flat, full and numb. I heard the rats stole a bad dog. Together roaches some, and everybody wanna know.
Awesome, B.B. King. He was in Africa. That was live from 1974, Why I Sing the Blues. And today we have Amber Wengert with ISU Extension. Welcome, Amber.
Thanks, Pat. It's good to be here.
Great to have you once again, always. And the world of ISU Extension in here in Story County. I know you do a lot of great things, and I guess the winter is moving along.
We hope so.
Yeah.
We can't wait for spring. We're gearing up for spring, that's for sure.
Do you have a spring break in mind?
We do. We have quite a few activities planned for March 11th through March 18th is our spring break programming this year. We have, starting March 11th, we have babysitting basics for any youth from fifth grade and up to explore the business of babysitting. And then on Monday, we will have 4-H'ers in training, and that's open to all youth, so you don't have to be a 4-H'er to be involved in that. And it's for kindergarten through sixth graders. They can come just explore different project areas and do some arts and activities there. And we're also going to, on Wednesday then, Tuesday the 15th, we're going to be up in Story City. So if you're up in the Story City area listening to us, the youth from K through 6 can join in another artful day.
Well,
so all about just colors and art materials, and you can create your own artwork on Tuesday the 15th.
Let's talk about the babysitting workshop.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
You said fifth graders? So
yeah, any youth in fifth grade and up. So
fifth grade and up. So mm-hmm. They're 10 years. And why do people babysit? Earn a little extra money or how?
Yeah, definitely. It's the, you know, it's a way for the young kids to explore a business, their own business, really.
Uh-huh.
Earn some spending cash or really, I mean,
is the breakdown then how to be security conscious on how to be a good caregiver?
Yeah, we'll explore some safety measures. We'll kind of explore the different ages of youth and, you know, activities that would be good for different stages of the youth, and explore, you know, just your confidence of being alone and what to do in case of an emergency.
Sure. Well, there it is. I had no idea that ISU Extension would have outreach on how to become a babysitter and learn a little extra cash on
the side. Yes, it's actually one of our most popular programs. Oh, yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. Well, thank you for explaining that.
Yeah,
so
no
what
problem.
Was and what was the next?
On Wednesday the 16th, we have a full steam ahead into spring. So we're going to do some spring activities using different science tools, and that's for K through sixth graders as well. Now on Thursday, I'm really excited for Energy Camp. That's for the older youth, for 7th through 12th graders. And they're going to discover energy and then renewable or non-renewable energy. And they also have an opportunity to, on Friday then, the 18th, to go to the energy lab on ISU campus.
Excellent.
Yeah. And then our last final event for spring break on Friday afternoon, we have I Love My Pet. So we're going to explore how to take care of a pet and, you know, what you might need for treats or toys or, you know, kind of what you might need to do to take them to the vet. So it'll be kind of fun for any youth that is interested or wanting to get their own pet.
Wonderful. You know, and see, I love my pet. I would presume that ISU Extension, you know, with a land-grant university would have outreach on animal husbandry and this sort of topic. I could imagine that workshop being very popular and probably one of the originals way back.
Yes, yep. Very
way
much
back
so.
When.
Have one more spring break activity that's a take-home activity for the whole family to do together. We have some spring break camp boxes that are available, and we actually have meals and recipe with ingredients included, and so the families can create a meal together. And then we have some STEM activities involved in the box as well, related to sound. So that can be an option if you're unavailable to come to one of our programs. You can sign up for a camp box, and you can do it on your own time.
So they should ask for camp box?
Camp box, yep.
Oh, okay. Well, great.
Yeah. All right. So those are some fun spring break activities. And then we have some thinking ahead towards summer. We have some a floral arranging series for adults that we just wanted to kind of get out there and push your save the date for us. We're starting, the first one is June 1st. It's going to be 6 to 7 o'clock at night. And you can come to our office. We'll have a live stream with Dan Braybeck, and this professor at Iowa State, and he's going to show you how to create your own floral arrangement. So then we'll, in the office here, we'll have flowers, and you can make your own arrangement and take home with you.
Whoa, what a great thing to look forward to, June 1st. Yeah.
Yeah, we have one in June 1st, August 2nd, and one again on November 16th that we've already got scheduled.
And where would a listener go to learn more about those dates? And
yeah, all of our programs are on our website at extension.iastate.edu/story. And you're always welcome as well to give us a call at our office at 515-337-1601.
Okay, and I think your offices are located kind of southeast Ames at 1421 South Bell Avenue.
That's correct, just off of Highway 30.
Is there anything else, Amber?
I heard you talking about earlier the farmers market this weekend.
Yeah.
Michaela is also going to be there from our office. And so you can stop by the indoor farmers market this weekend here in Ames and see Michaela.
Oh, great.
Ask her any questions there as well. So
yeah, look for Michaela. We've had her on the radio. Sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, that's great. Okay. Well, thank you, Amber Wengert. Thanks for all you do for ISU Extension here in Story County.
Thanks, Pat. Appreciate it.
You bet. Local Talk airs each weekday at 7 a.m. on 89.1 FM. So tell your friends far and wide, KHOI is streaming live at khoifm.org, and hit the play button. We'll have this program available as soon as possible. And please remember to support this station financially when you go to that website, khoifm.org, and find that friendly yellow donate button.
KHOI provides a platform for citizens and public officials to air opinions and information. The views of our guests do not necessarily reflect those of KHOI. KHOI is community nonprofit, nonpartisan media.
Thank you, Local Talk producer Lyd Carey, and thank you, Dennis Hart, with your Friday report. Thank you, engineer Mike Murphy, and thank you, co-host Mike Metz. Thanks to our guests Mario Cothen, Susan Guiasta, Barbara Neal, and Amber Winger. I have been your host for this hour, Pat Schlarbaum.
Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other artists you heard were Lead Belly and Chuck Berry and B.B. King. Stay tuned for headline news and Democracy Now! And Adagio at 9 a.m. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.
Story City and Ames.